golfj.com.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Golf J Podcast on FingerLakes1.tv. I'm Jim Sinacropi alongside Rhett Ticone and Doug Brown here inside the FingerLakes1.com studios in Seneca Falls, New York on Monday, June 6th, 2016, where tonight we'll be talking about William McGirt's win at the Memorial and what the play of Rory McIlroy, Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth, and Jason Day in Ohio means for the U.S. Open coming up in just less than 2 weeks. And today is also known as the longest day in golf, as the U.S. Open sectional qualifiers were held in 10 locations across the country. We'll hear from Garen Reif of Even Roll Putters on why his product might be the best putter ever made.
I like it. I'll second that.
And we'll give our picks for the St. Jude Classic, tell you about a book Tiger Woods is writing, our weekly Golf J trivia question, and we'll talk about the NCAA Men's Golf Championship won by Oregon last Wednesday night. So, fellas, it's June. We're right in the heart of it. We're playing golf. We're watching golf. Tonight we're talking about golf.
It's all golf all the time now.
So, first of all, the Memorial was on a tape delay on CBS, which is a little strange.
Yeah.
Well, they had some bad weather coming in, so they changed the starting time to be early Sunday morning.
Yeah, got out quite early.
And then it was actually a weather delay about the middle of the back nine there.
Brought them right into their slot.
Yeah, so they manipulated the starting time, so basically go off before 60 minutes started.
But if you happen to be looking on your smartphone,
right.
Usually even when I watch it on TV, I'll have the leaderboard on my smartphone in case something comes up. I'm wondering where somebody is, but you would have been 20 minutes ahead of the action. So a lot of people didn't necessarily like that. But
you could have made a bet with somebody if they didn't know any better.
That's right. Missed opportunity. Missed opportunity.
Billy Walters might have made that bet.
So William McGirt gets the win, and I don't know how much you guys have looked into this guy's background, but he's played in every mini tour probably imaginable. Only won once on the mini tours. Played 165, I think it was. Yeah, this was his 165th start.
Yeah.
And he finally gets the win, and all of a sudden you get that, three-year exemption on tour, and you're going, you're in the Masters, and he's also in the U.S. Open, which he wasn't yet.
He's the epitome of a grinder, grinding out a career. Nice one at that.
Sure. It was a couple years ago. He was on a leaderboard quite often in the summer and the fall. I think it was 14.
Right,
yeah.
And last year, I don't think he played too well. But this year, he's been sneaking up the leaderboards lately, and then obviously he put it all together this week.
He had a good good few. I remember in DraftKings last year in the fall, he had a good couple weeks.
Top five, top ten in the fall tournaments.
Yeah. So, he's been right there, and he got some, he cited Tiger as having a big impact on not only his win, but, his career and the path he's taken,
You got to give him credit for perseverance.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would assume he's in his mid-30s by the looks of him. He's been around a while, right?
Mm-hmm.
He could have packed it in and gone and got a club job someplace, or some guy was a shoe salesman not too long ago that won a golf tournament, right?
Yeah.
So he could have done something else. But it shows that, they work hard.
Yeah.
And there's 140 players every week, and there's not a big gap between the first and the 140th overall. And if his weakness is putting and he putts well that week, then he's in. Maybe his weakness is driving. I don't know the guy's game that well, but
changes his life, though.
$1.53 million for first, and he's up to 10th in the FedEx Cup standings.
That's a big number.
So this carried a little bit more points than the average tournament
did. Right.
So it's not a major, but.
Well, that's what I was saying, not last week because I wasn't here, but 2 weeks ago we were talking. The I still feel the Memorial is a bigger tournament than the TPC.
Yeah,
I think it's on par with it. I don't know if I'd say it's bigger.
Maybe not, but the field, the timing makes it feel more because it's right in front of the Open.
Yeah.
Jack, obviously. I mean, Jack, in my mind, Jack carries more weight than the Players' Championship right there.
By name, he does.
Right. And
the field was equally as strong.
Yeah, and the winners, the list of winners over the years is very, very big. So it's good to kind of the unofficial start to summer is the Players and then the Memorial and then right into U.S. Open.
Yeah, this is one of the top 10 events all year if you think the majors being the first four.
Sure.
But you got to think Arnold Palmer's is up there.
Yeah.
This one's up there, TPC. So it's
Tour
seven,
Championship.
Tour Championship, right.
Yep.
It's a big event. And I'm sure they look forward to playing in it. And Jack Nicklaus adds a lot of credibility to that for the reason to play.
It's fun, too, when you watch the coverage and Nicklaus is up in the booth.
Oh, yeah.
Giving his thoughts on the game in general and the players he's watching. Yeah. That's a nice addition to it. And we're up here in the Northeast, and it's similar type of feel to a Northeast course that we're used to playing. Yeah. I like that. And it's always impeccable, and it gets to where you learn the holes.
Because
the golf course is tremendous.
We might have to take a road trip there. One of my buddies, Sean Richard, he's assistant AD at Ohio State. And he's played there a few times, he says. He keeps telling me to come out.
Hook us up. Doug's been in the parking lot.
I actually got in the pro shop.
We got to get there. So, Sean, if you're watching us tonight, start thinking about when we can play out there.
Yeah,
just pick a date. We'll make it work.
We'll make it work somehow.
We'll get there, even if we got to do a day trip.
We can leave right now.
Yep, exactly.
So, one thing about the Memorial is it looks like Rory's coming into form. Rory McIlroy, and I think you had him to win.
I picked Ryan Palmer.
That's right, and I had Day, and he really faded on Sunday. Yeah. Always struggles at that course, but McIlroy putted well,
he changed back.
Right handle. Yeah.
The regular conventional grip.
Yeah. He's rounding into form, I think, with Oakmont. The longer hitters definitely have advantage there, but you've got to hit it straight there. You know how that goes. And putting, obviously, with the speed of those greens is utmost important. So if he's coming into form and he can keep the driver straight, then he's going to be a tough one to beat.
Yeah, I think when he wins one here on U.S. soil, he's able to win three out of five.
And they said, they say, Jim, that he went there today, right? I mean, he's
playing Monday, Tuesday practice rounds at Oakmont.
Yeah.
And, we're going to talk about coming up here, the chances of these guys in the U.S. Open. If anything, we saw at the Memorial changed it. But it was great to see him putting well. Yeah. A lot of times when you make any change, it's going to help your putting for a short period of time. But I still am suspect to him on the super fast, super slopey greens of Oakmont. So. He hasn't totally convinced me yet, but he's certainly going to be a favorite.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you got Dustin Johnson, who played well again, but of course didn't win. But he had one of the most fun shots of the year when he was punching out from the woods. He just dribbled it down to the cart path, and then the thing took off. It was from start to finish, they had to be the longest shot ever, maybe. It was literally maybe a 45-second shot.
Yeah. Right?
It just rolled and rolled down the cart path, and eventually ended up in a spot where he had an open shot in, after taking a drop. So,
nothing like using the cart path to your advantage.
And Jordan Spieth really struggled with the driver, which is kind of scary heading into Oakmont. He finished 66th in the field in driving accuracy, I think it was. And you're not going to want to miss the fairways at Oakmont. Doesn't matter how good of a putter you are, if you're going to have to hit fairways to score on that course.
Yeah, the rough is brutal.
So he had an interview that I saw, I'm not sure if it was last night or this morning, that he's thinking about hitting three wood or driving iron a lot of times.
Yeah, makes sense.
Okay, to avoid hitting driver. So he's willing to give up the length to keep the ball in the fairway.
Which is odd for a guy who's not known for length. So giving up even more distance potentially to Dustin Johnson and Rory and Jason Day.
But if you look at his stats, like the strokes gained driving, he's not good. Strokes gained chipping and putting, he's tremendous. And he's like, if I can just back this off and get it in the fairway, I can get it around the green where
that's
I'm very good.
That's all he needs to do. I mean, if his putter's rolling and he can hit, irons and three woods, reminiscent of Tiger doing that at the Open.
Right.
And was it 05 or not?
Right.
05,
he had five drivers all weekend or something.
Yeah.
But he knows where his weakness is, so he's identified it, obviously, and he's willing to take it out.
Yeah.
We'll see how that plays out.
It's going to be good. They're all playing well at the right time. Yeah. The big names, Dustin Johnson's right there, too.
And, I would think the cream will rise to the top. Next
at Oakmont, sure.
Let's hope so.
I think so.
Now, what about Kuchar? Here he is again in position to win. He had a two-shot lead on the back nine. I think it was he held the lead through 11, and then he double bogeyed the 13th, and another top 10 finish, but no win for Matt Kuchar.
I think Kuchar did a nice job losing that event yesterday. That was his to win.
Yeah,
in the early part of the back nine.
That's kind of been his thing lately.
Yes.
I mean, he's definitely consistent. I mean, he's a great guy to pick week to week. Yeah. Or if you have him on your
season-long
fantasy team, you're going to do well with him. But just he's not getting the Ws.
Yeah.
You know, he's not closing out tournaments. He's having a tough time either on Saturday or Sunday. But, yeah, you're right.
The shot he hit out of the fairway bunker, and I think it was 13. You're talking about the double bogey.
Yeah.
he was 5 or 6 feet short of getting it over the lip. It looked like he struck it pretty good. Right. He had the wrong club. You know, there you got to get it out of the bunker first and foremost and make bogey one thing. He made about an 8-footer for double bogey.
Right.
So
that, we talk about a guy like McGirt playing 165 starts without a win. Yeah. And not saying he didn't win it because he did, but it was Kuchar's to win. So yes, if Kuchar closes it out, McGirt doesn't get the win. We're talking about Kuchar. And we're not even mentioning McGirt.
Yes. McGirt's playing today.
And so it's so hard to win on the PGA Tour. Yeah. You need, not only do you need to play well, but in a lot of cases, you need some help from the field.
It's a 72-hole event. So. Right. It's like the Masters. You know, you think about Spieth shot on 12. If that happened on Thursday, we might not talk about it as much because it happened Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
Kuchar hit that shot Thursday afternoon. We don't even see it because it's not even covered. But in 72 holes, William McGirt had him and John Curran had the best 72-hole score.
And like I said, for Spieth, if that shot happens on Thursday, he may make other birdies or do other things differently to change the outcome for the rest of his rounds. He's not. Right. I mean, he was just toast once he did that on Sunday. He was just, you know, 5 holes to go, or he was done. But if that happens Thursday, a whole different scenario for him. But
so Curran said that, you know, he had trouble with playoff. He didn't actually say he had trouble. He said he did focus and get it going, but he said he couldn't help but feel like he'd already accomplished something just getting into the playoff.
Right.
And so, it comes down to two guys, and the one who wins that playoff, their life changes. The other guy's still, toiling away looking for that first victory. I mean, so
I think you're going to see John Curran rise to the top, though. He's been improving every year. He played high school golf. They won some state championships. He's a historically a very, very accomplished golfer. I'm trying to think who he played high school golf with now. It doesn't matter. But you're going to see he's rising up to the top, and you're going to see him win and then win a few.
Yeah, he was
He's
also
got a great short game.
Yeah.
So many good guys. I mean, when Griot won last year, he won in a playoff and changed his life. And Smiley Kaufman wins that rain-delayed tournament. Just how much difference it makes in their lives when they get that first win, and then they don't have to worry about so many things that they're grinding and always thinking about every day. If they aren't getting those wins, and once you get that first one, you may not necessarily get a ton more after that. But if you've got that one, you don't have to think about the whether you're going to be able to play in the tournament next week for the
and
next 3 years.
Less pressure when you get there. Yeah. Less pressure when you get in contention if you've already got one under your belt.
Right. And you show up on Monday to play that week, and you're just not as stressed out. You know, it changes who your groups are that you're playing with in practice rounds. You might get invited to play with Phil or those guys. It's just so many things change their lives in on tour when they get a W. It's pretty cool.
Especially the money.
Yeah,
that's a big thing.
No doubt.
You all of a sudden you cash a $1.5 million check, and you're not worried about pinching pennies when you're traveling to the next tour stop. You're maybe renting a private jet.
Right. Yeah. So. You're going from the used car to the camper to the private jet. Everything changes.
So one last thing from the memorial, Phil Mickelson shot a front 933, and you're thinking, okay, here comes Mickelson with a big charge. And then you start looking ahead to Oakmont, and you're thinking he's really rounding into form, but he bogeys 10, 11, and 12, and he's just out of it. And I personally, I don't see him winning another major. It seemed like that was his – he was really set up to close at the Memorial, coming from behind, and he wasn't even – didn't figure into it, by the time they got to the last few holes. So, but McGirt has a mixed bag there. He's got, for his woods, he's got the TaylorMade M2. He's got a driver at 8.5 degrees, a 3-wood at 13 degrees, and a 5-wood at 17 degrees. He plays Srix on ZU45, 2 and 3 iron, so he carries a 2 and 3 iron, which is odd. And for his irons are Srix on Z745s. His wedges are Cleveland 588 RTX 2.0s at 48, 54, and 60 degrees. And he's got a Scotty Cameron 009 prototype, plays a Srixon Z-Star ball. So I think anytime, especially with Srixon, when their guys win, because Srixon's like that borderline brand that doesn't feel like an elite brand. But when a guy wins a PGA Tour tournament with that ball, that's got to mean so much to the folks at Srixon, right?
Yeah.
It's a weird combination there, though, because you wonder who he's getting paid for to use, like, or what are these? Which of these clubs are like special in his bag that he keeps that he doesn't have a contract with, and which ones are something he might be getting paid?
Yeah, it's not like one of the top guys who, you know, if you sign a contract with TaylorMade like Jason Day or Nike like McElroy,
you're using
our Titleist like Spieth, right?
Yeah,
that you're going head to toe.
Yeah, exactly.
But he had a Strixon hat that had Cleveland on the side as well. They're owned by the same company.
There you go.
So he's getting paid by Cleveland Strixon.
But then he's got the Titleist putter, or Scotty Cameron, and he's got the weird thing is the woods, the TaylorMade woods in there, how that plays into
They seem to be the best woods on tour, I would say.
Most
the drivers
tours, yeah.
and the M2s.
M2.
So, and again, TaylorMade up for sale. We talked about that the past couple weeks. So
maybe with this win, he'll have a full set of something moving
forward. Strixon makes woods, metals, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah.
And they're very good. So. I've seen them. I've hit them a couple times in demos.
Just as good as the other clubs.
Of course, Cleveland makes a full set as well. They used to have some.
Right.
Keegan Bradley won a PGA using all Cleveland clubs.
VJ used to be an all Cleveland guy.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, when he was rolling back in the early 2000s.
So.
Well, maybe this will change that for him too. You know, it opens up doors for sponsorships and marketing as well.
Right. Sure. Did anything we see at the Memorial change last week? Doug and I sat here while Rhett was home nursing a headache, and we talked about who we thought was going to win the Open, and he went with McElroy. I went with Jason Day. Who would you have picked last week?
Last week I would have picked I would have went with Rory, and I think I'll stay with that, and nothing's really going to change my mind.
If anything, you guys are encouraged with the McElroy pick.
No doubt. I mean, he won last week, or was it 2 weeks ago, and then he did well again this week. I just like the way he's playing. I like the fact that he went back to his old style of putting and did well this week doing that. That was a little nerve-wracking Wednesday of last week, Tuesday, when you hear he's changing right before the tournament starts, but it didn't seem to bother him. And, I just think he's ready to get another one and remind everybody that he's still one of the top
A force
top
to be
two
reckoned
guys.
With.
Yeah. And, Jason Day, I think he might have had a lot of distractions. Like you said, Jim, Columbus Memorial doesn't treat him well. But I think
he's got a lot of family around, which people think normally that's going to be good for a guy. But, he's entertaining probably.
Right.
And
everybody's staying at his house. And, but he don't – we'll talk way more about this next week. But you can't discount him either. But I like Rory.
Yeah. Nobody's going to pick William McGirt to win the Open then?
I'm not
out of this panel?
He's hot. I mean, he could. Anybody could.
Well, anybody could.
Maybe the St. Jude, but not – not the Open.
But Jason Day tends to get warmed up and then peak at the right time.
Yeah.
And so I actually feel ultra confident about the Day pick. The only thing that makes me feel a little less confident about Day is that McElroy seems to be really stepping it up and he putted well. And, Jordan Spieth, once he gets in that U.S. Open environment, he's going to be fine.
Yeah.
He's going to be scrambling, getting up and down. Yeah. If he can keep it in the fairway, he's gonna be fine.
Well,
so
they know if they can hang around even par, they're going to be in the hunt.
Yeah.
5 over par won the last time
at
his site.
That was crazy.
So, but if you can hang around even par, you're never far out.
Right.
I agree. Jason Day said he's taking this week off. He's going to go there next Friday and play 18 holes. He's going to do the same thing he did for the Masters. And then he plays 9 holes, like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, so he doesn't get tired.
Hmm. Right. He should do the same thing he did at the PGA, if you ask me, not the Masters.
Yeah,
or the same thing he did.
Well,
at the
probably
players.
Did the same thing. At the PGA.
You're probably right.
They're pretty dialed into the routines.
Yeah,
It was interesting though that Rory was going there today, and he's going to start playing already.
There was a charity event that they were invited to.
Is
as
that
well.
Right?
There were several pros were playing some event.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who's got multi-millions who built the bridge over the road to have the event the last time. He has a charity event every year. This is the last one.
Okay.
So like him and Mickelson's playing. There's several guys that were playing in that event.
If I'm a top tour player like that, I'm skipping the week before every single major and going there and just getting acclimated to the time zone, to the course, to the weather, everything.
Right.
I'm going out there and just playing fun little rounds, you know, and then once the tournament week gets there, you get into your practice round routines.
Yeah. Right.
But I would want the extra time just to really get acclimated with the conditions.
Right. We should play at 10 o'clock in the morning and 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, sure.
Because you're going to get somewhat of an early and a late, right? And
then,
you know, the amateurs are going to go out at 7 o'clock in the morning or 4:30 at night, but these guys are going to go out at between 11 and 2 or something like that, but weather can change.
And not to mention, you relax, you just get there and you don't have to, you know, play 4 rounds, get on a plane and fly, you know, not that it's a long flight, but, and it's private, obviously, but you're just there. You don't have to worry about getting in late Sunday and
you know, settle in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Makes more sense.
Well, my biggest takeaway, I think, from the memorial was the great play of some of the big hitters, like Dustin Johnson, who came in third, and Rory, who we talked about, and Gary Woodland, who tied for fourth with Kuchar, and J.B. Holmes played well. And if you got some of these bombers, which is another reason I like Day, is because he's so accurate off the tee and so long. Yeah. That can hit it long and straight. I think it's a huge advantage at Oakmont. Mm-hmm. So look out, you know, for some of those names.
Straight is the key.
Long and straight. Long and straight.
Long definitely helps, but straight.
Something else about that event is, as we wrap this up, I thought it was a good human interest story about that Nationwide Children's Hospital that they had those kids that are survivors of some serious illnesses out on the golf course. And that one young man is in high school. Had double problems with his heart, and the doctors knew he was a golfer, and they videotaped his golf swing, and they figured out the best place to install a defibrillator so that it wouldn't interfere with his golf swing.
Wow.
Because he wants to play on a PGA Tour.
Cool. Well, we'll keep an eye on him then.
And he was the one who was hanging out with Jack Nicklaus during the course of the week, and Peyton Manning played golf there in the Pro-Am and all that. But not just that one boy, there were several, and they had logos on his shirt about being survivors of something. But kudos to the charities that receive a lot of money from the tour and from the sponsors.
Yeah.
They do great stuff. And
that's the one thing about the PGA Tour is the fact that every stop raises millions of dollars for.
Right.
And next week's is probably one of the biggest, our most well-known fundraisers for the St. Jude's Hospital, which is that's the only national charity that I personally give to is St. Jude's. There's something about the kids that are unfortunate enough to be afflicted with cancer or other diseases that St. Jude's is a great charity. But the Major League Baseball and the NFL, they all give their share.
Absolutely.
But the PGA Tour, it's astronomical the amount that gets generated for charities.
And think about just some of the players. Obviously, the bigger ones that get the bigger checks and they make a lot more money. But some of the just donating, like McIlroy at the Irish Open 2 weeks ago, donated the whole check to his charity. I mean, $1.5 million right there in one day. That's just huge for those organizations.
And that's another thing about the PGA Tour extending their season into the fall is that the more money's being raised.
Yeah.
So sometimes you don't even look at that. You just think about the players and how we can hold your interest for events all year long. But the extra events in the fall mean more money for the charities and the towns, especially that are hosting them. So
you think what the NFL spends like over $40 million on Super Bowl. And just think how much money that is and, like, where could that be spent better? And the PGA is raising over $40 million for charities. You know, again, like you said, the other ones, they all raise their money, but, man, PGA does a great job with it.
Yep, absolutely.
I wish they would advertise a little bit more because it was a good little two-minute blurb yesterday on television about it, and they should do more about the benefits. I know they don't want to really maybe advertise all the hardship that goes on in the world, but there is hardship.
Yeah,
and they're benefiting an awful lot of people being touched by the money that's being raised. So, you know, you go and buy a ticket for, I don't know, $80 a day maybe to go to that tournament. Okay, but some of that money is going to that, to those young kids that I just referred to.
Pretty significant amount.
Yeah. So, anyways.
So, do you guys hear, Doug, you hear that Tiger's writing a book?
I did hear about that.
Going to be about the 1997 Masters, and it's going to come out in March. And supposedly he's going to talk a lot about his dad, and there's going to be a lot about that historic performance in 97 that we might not have known about until that book comes out. But, again, Tiger's now focused on writing a book. Is he's not coming back? He's not coming back. He's not coming back before that book comes out. What do you guys think of that?
It's not going to release until 17.
Yeah, yeah. In March of 2017, yeah. which amazingly is the 20th anniversary of Tiger's 1997 yeah. win, which yes. That was 20 years ago, really?
Shocking, right?
Hard to imagine.
Jeez.
But he'll be back before the book's out.
He might be back before the book's out.
That would be an interesting side bet, maybe.
He hasn't withdrawn from the Open yet, has he?
No, I guess he hasn't, but that's crazy.
But you could, as we get farther along, you could definitely make a case saying now that he might not play this year. I mean, it doesn't sound like he's in any hurry.
He's making reservations for homes, and
but
he's got a plan.
He might be, but in some of these places, he might go anyway, just because he has obligations. Yeah. Like he'll go to the National in July, and you never know.
He'll be back this year.
I'd like to see him back too, Doug. I'm a pretty big fan of his as well.
He won't play this week.
No,
well, it's too late anyways now. But I thought he'd play Memorial, take the week off, and
that's
play
what
the Open.
The expectations were, if now you think he's not going to play the Open, if he's not going to play the Open, what do you think he's going to? A few weeks go across the pond to play the British Open? I don't know when would be ideal for him to come back if he feels he's ready to come back. I don't think you jump right into a major, certainly not Oakmont.
Firestone, maybe.
Yeah. He won't be eligible to play in any of the FedEx tournaments. So if he doesn't come back before then he's got to wait until
fall series
after. And if you do that and you're Tiger and you come back then, now all of a sudden you're in the weaker fields and people expect you to win. Yeah. And that in a way is even more pressure.
Although I guarantee you the PGA Tour wants him to come back in those and play maybe one or two of those. That would definitely boost ratings.
Fries.com or something.
Yeah, ESPN and Golf – or not ESPN, but Golf Channel and all those would love to have him in those tournaments to get some more viewership.
Well, we'll wait and see on Tiger.
So I'll buy the book. You'll buy the book.
Definitely.
You'll buy the book.
Yeah. I think that in particular could be a pretty interesting read. It's just hard to believe. Like I said, it'll be 20 years, but mm-hmm. – Time for this week's Golf J trivia question. Tweet your answer to @TheGolfJ. First one to tweet will win a Golf J hat. And we mentioned, and we're going to talk about later in the show, U.S. Open sectional qualifying. And I want to know, who was the last U.S. Open winner to come out of sectional qualifying? So they weren't exempt. They went through the qualifying process. And now there's local qualifying, which is everybody with a 1.4 handicap or lower can enter. And then a small number of those, which close to 10,000 people enter. Right. So out of the 10,000, you end up with about 700 who go to sectional qualifying. And that was today, 10 sites around the country. There's also two international qualifiers, one in Japan and one in Europe, that were held May 30th or end of May. But today was the 10 sectional qualifiers. So who was the last one to come out of sectional qualifying, win the U.S. Open, tweeted at us, and we'll send you a hat if you're the first.
That's a long day, too, right? That's 36 holes.
Longest day in golf. We'll talk about that coming up. But first, I want to take a look back at a conversation that Rhett and I had with Garen Reif of Even Roll Putters. And Garen Reif's been a putting guru, a manufacturing guru, and technology guru for probably close to 20 years now. Yeah. And when we talked to him, Rhett, he said he went from his marketing job in Chicago to becoming just fascinated and obsessed with building putters.
Right.
And his latest is the Even Roll putter, which I guess we'll kick in the interview now. We'll play you about 10 minutes of that interview, the full interview available at golfj.com if you want to listen to the full interview. But we're going to introduce you now to Garen Reif and hear what he has to say about the Even Roll putter. Into the show, Garen, thanks for joining us today. How's the weather out there in California?
Hey, Jim, Rhett, good to talk to you guys, and thanks for giving us a voice. The weather, of course, is gorgeous, as always. It's just, it almost stresses you out because there's no bad weather. You know, you get a little uptight. You know, isn't anything going to happen? it's beautiful out here, and happy to be here, and happy to be talking to you guys.
Well, talk a little bit, I guess, give us an overview of the technology behind this and what led you to down this road to create such a unique putter. And, tell us a little bit about the Even Roll.
Sure. I'll just kind of tell you how it evolved. You know that I invented straight grooves with my Rife company years ago, mm-hmm. And I know that grooves by putting them very close together on the face of a putter, you have this contact surface that's really really narrow, and that's what grips the ball and allows grooved putters to lift the ball without loft and create a quicker roll and a higher quality roll. But it also doesn't transfer as much energy into the ball because there's less contact surface. And so I use the same putter with and without any grooves on it. And if you just hit those two in the middle, say a 25-foot putt, well, the one without the grooves on it, the solid mill, straight, smooth milled face will hit the ball, say, 25 feet. Well, if you hit it with the grooves, it only goes 23 and a half feet because there's less energy transfer, less contact surface meeting the ball. So that was just something that I've known for a long time, and I just thought, you know, what if I increased the contact surface away from the center? Because I also know that off-center hits, and this is from a lot of robot testing, that if you hit a ball, say, a half inch off-center, it'll go about 6 to 8 inches. Say if it was toward the toe, the miss hit, it would go away from the center off to the toe about 6 to 8 inches at 25 feet. And, I mean, that's a lot. And it also doesn't go as far because the center of mass is not behind it. And the same is true on the heel side. It doesn't go as far, and it goes on the heel side of the center line, and it doesn't go as far. So it's about a 5% energy loss when you get away from the center. And so I started doing some. I took the groove technology that I originally did, and I just widened the center area and made the land, or the land, what we call the land, is that's the contact surface in the middle. That's the part that touches the ball. Well, that part was very fine, and then I just made it a very very narrow, and then I widened it just gradually toward the heel and toe. And I started doing some testing. And actually, in the original, like I told you when you were out here, Rhett, the original testing, I overdid it. Yeah. And so the balls on the off-center hit went further than the center. So I backed it off. And I just made it kind of it's what we call a parabolic. That's what your eye, the shape of your eye. So
how did you?
So that parabolic, placed next to another one very closely, created more contact surface. And these things have to be even all the way across the face. It's about an inch and a half to an inch and three quarter distance across the center of the face where these that just takes care of every possible mishit. And so that was. So I dialed it back down to the point where everything went the same distance. But what else happened, and this was just one of those serendipity things, that parabolic shape was just gearing the ball gently to the center. And so in that original test I told you about where I overdid it, the balls actually crossed each other and went further. And I went, well, that's interesting. I backed it off to the point where they just go the same distance and then they come together, and it eliminates the dispersion, and then the greater surface where the grooves get narrower and the contact surface gets greater, that imparts more energy where the putter's weaker. So everything goes the same distance to the same spot. And it's just a repeatable test. Now I think I sent you some pictures. I don't know if you're able to show the the robot and the roll, but you can also look at those. You can see the on the graphics from our trade show picture. You can see the way the grooves get narrower and the contact surface gets greater away from the center. And so that just after dialing that in, that's just the formula for making it happen, making every putt go the same distance to the same spot. So essentially, we've just taken the mishit out of the equation, which is really quite common. Even the best players in the world have a tough time hitting that center quarter-inch area, which I've done a lot of testing and found that to be true. So
now how did you, mishits
are a big issue, and people don't realize how much a ball will go offline. So,
Garen, talk a little bit about the graphic that you have on your website with where it relates to the loss of energy and the energy replaced. Like, how did you derive the 1%, 2%, like, and the amount of surface that it takes to get to those numbers?
Well, that's done with, very rigorous robot testing. I sent you a picture of sort of the robot from the back, but it has a magnet release, and it's very precise. And I just took a standard face putter. Actually, it's the same. It's the ER1 with nothing on the face. And I took a lot of other putters, and I rolled thousands of putts. And it's really trial and error. But,
right.
But what happens is that when you hit the center, whatever distance that went, the loss as I went away from the center up to like a half inch to even 5/8 of an inch, that's where the fall off in distance consistently across the board would happen for just about every putter. Even some of the big MOI putters, I mean, it was only a slight difference, but you just, when you hit a ball off center, the center of mass is not behind it, and it just loses energy. So that was sort of a trial, an error, really research and development. I mean, you just have to test. And so that, when I found that out, I knew that I was losing energy, so I had to replace that energy by increasing the contact surface, and that's how all this evolved.
Right.
That's pretty amazing. Now, you obviously come at this with a scientific background.
There was just a portion about, the whole interview was 42 minutes long. If you're interested in putter manufacturing and want to learn more about the technology and marketing behind this, it was a great interview. We love that Garen Reif took the time out to talk with us. And really, you've been using the EvenRoll before it even came out. And the concept is, as you heard in the interview, that there's grooves on the putter face,
right?
And in the center, wire, where the sweet spot is, they're thinner.
Yeah. Oh, right.
And
right.
Then as it gets out towards the edge,
they get wider.
Yeah, they get wider. With the thought being, in the middle, less surface area means the ball will go shorter.
Correct.
Than it will it will go the same distance if you hit it out on the toe or in the heel.
Right.
And it also should help it get back online a little bit.
Correct.
It almost seems like it should be illegal, but it's not.
When he showed me out in the studio with the robot, I really, he set it in the dead center and went a certain distance, set it off the toe, certain distance, same exact line. So it was going on the same line and the same distance, heel, toe, in the center. So
he had a robot.
Yep.
And you could hit five balls, different spots in the club face, and then walk 23 feet away and pick them all up with one hand.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, because they're all the same distance. Hmm. But not only the face, that just the balance and the weight of the putter. It's a little heavier, but it's not the perimeter weighted putters. It has a little bit of extra weight in the butt of the club. And it has an additional 15 grams in the base of the club. So, but it feels solid in every hit, the swing, and keeps you on plane. And it's a great product. So definitely recommend watching the whole interview and learning about the process of how his putters are made and putters in general. But also just the way he markets what he's trying to do and help you roll it truer. And
you can buy them now.
Yep.
Yeah, when you got yours, when you went out to the studio in California, they weren't available yet. No. But just a couple weeks ago, at the end of May, they became available at their website at EvenRoll.
Right.
EvenRoll without the E, second E.
Right.
EvenRoll.com.
Yep.
For starting at $2.99.
Yep. Yep. A good product. Check it out.
So, St. Jude's Classic, the last tournament. I says there primer for the Colonial. Hold on a second. I can change that on the fly. We're talking about the FedEx St.
Look at this guy.
Saint.
We have a technology.
This guy is classic. No joke. Producer and host. He does it all. My Lord.
The PGA Tour heads to Memphis, home of Elvis.
That's right.
So there we go. Now that we got our graphics on point, it's a St. Jude's is a solid little tournament. It's
around a while.
Yeah, it's just because it's right before the Open. You know, not going to get that field, that super field that we just had at the Memorial, sure. Or even the type of field that we had at the Colonial. But
right.
Give you a little background. It's at the TPC Southwind. That's a 7,200-yard course, par 70, $6.2 million purse. Fabian Gomez won it last year. 2014, it was Ben Crane. 2013, Harris English. And then 2012, it was Dustin Johnson. You can watch it on TV Thursday through Friday, 3:30 to 6:30 on the Golf Channel. Saturday and Sunday, 1 to 2:30 p.m. Eastern on the Golf Channel, 3 to 6 on CBS. And then CBS is done, and Fox takes over at the U.S. Open.
Right.
So your last chance to watch some golf on CBS for a while. Four-time major champ Ernie Els was a last-minute addition to the field at the St. Jude Classic, joined a group that already included Phil Mickelson, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, and Steve Stricker. Luke Donald, Retief Goosen, Padraig Harrington, and reigning champion Fabio Gomez are all among the 156 players scheduled to participate. Lee McCoy, who plays fourth at the Valspar Championship, is making his pro debut now this week. And the St. Jude's Classic, home since 1989, TPC Southwind winds through natural lakes, streams, and ponds on a former dairy farm southeast of Memphis. And maybe their par 3 11th hole is the one that you're going to want to watch. It draws comparisons to the famed 17th at Sawgrass, requiring a short iron over water to a small island green. And a U.S. Open berth remains available for anyone who moves into the top 60 of the world rankings, or, of course, if they win
the
event. Among those hoping to move up, Fabian Gomez and Ryan Palmer, who tied for third at the Colonial last week, so 2 weeks ago. So,
and Palmer, you mentioned him. He's not in as of yet with qualifying, so he'll be looking to make an impact and get a win here in this.
And he doesn't have to win to get there. He needs to move into the top six, so another top 10 finish might do it for Ryan Palmer.
Right.
But I'm going, I've probably picked two players all year long, and it's been Jason Day and Brooks Koepka, and this week I'm going with Koepka. This is going to be Koepka's time. He's going to win this week in Memphis. That's my pick.
All right. Well, I think I picked him a few other times as well, but I'm going to go with Dustin Johnson. I like the way he's playing, and it's be a good tune-up for him. I think he's ready to be right back in the mix at Oakmont, and I think he's going to get it done this week.
Got to be the odds-on favorite, right?
Yeah.
Highest-ranked player in the world competing?
Yep.
So.
I want to go with John Curran.
All right.
Hey.
The hot golfer from
last
week.
He is hot. I thought you might go with Palmer.
I'm not sure if Ryan Palmer's in the event. I didn't look at the field.
No, he's definitely. I'm assuming he's got to be because he's trying to get in the U.S. Open,
right? And he didn't qualify today,
right?
So,
I just think these guys sometimes they get on a roll, goes for 2 or 3 weeks. And John Curran got a lot of confidence last week, even though in defeat,
right?
Sure. But he got someplace he's never been before. I think he took away if there's such a thing as a moral victory.
Yeah,
I'm sure he got one last weekend. So, John Curran to win.
Three solid picks. I think, too, one to watch type thing would be Retief Goosen. He's played well as of late in a few different events.
What about his fellow South African Ernie Els, who's kind of had a little resurgence?
Yeah, I mean, since the Masters, he's played much better. And anytime he's in the field and he's playing on the weekend, you root for him. He's such a great guy. Even with getting back to the charities and stuff that he deals with, autism and stuff. I mean, you just can't not root for Ernie Els. So hopefully he'll have a good weekend as well.
Well, it's, like I say, coming up this weekend. Golf Channel CBS has the coverage. And we've been talking or alluding to it a little bit all week, or all show, about the U.S. Open. Whoops, that's the wrong one. I'm having some graphical trouble here. Here we go. The longest day in golf, U.S. Open sectional qualifying. And as I was telling you guys off camera, I caddied in two of these sectional qualifiers. And it was always amazing to me because you will get some of the big name
golfers at these things trying to get into the U.S. Open alongside some top amateurs and some no-name club pros like I was caddying for. And you got a field. They weight the different fields at the different events based on the size of how many spots are available. So at one of the 10 U.S. locations, you might only get two people getting in. And at others, you might get
three, four,
yeah, you might get up to 10.
I think one at 13 today. Yeah.
And that's generally the ones that really get the strongest field are the ones closest to either Ohio or Memphis, where the tour stops are.
Right.
So, we actually, these things just ended within the past 2-3 hours. Yeah. We don't have results for it. You can go online and see all the results from all the qualifiers. But yeah,
PGA.com has them all. But there's a few notable ones, though. Bryson DeChambeau shot a 63 to end up T2 and at minus 9. So he's going to be in. So that'll be good for the tournament to have him in there.
Absolutely. And I'll be rooting for DeChambeau. I'm a fan.
Absolutely.
But to me, this is the epitome of why golf is such a great sport. It's the U.S. Open, which means if you're a golfer, and you don't even have to live in America because there's international qualifiers too, but you got a better chance if you're in one of these U.S. qualifiers. There's more spots available. There's 10 qualifiers, but you start with local qualifying, and you need to be a 1.4 handicap or better. So if you're a good young player and you work and you get your handicap down to 1.4, you can enter. And then from there on out, it doesn't matter who your sponsors are. It doesn't matter who anything except the number that you put on the card. And you could legitimately qualify for the next round, which was held today.
Right.
And then qualify for there. You're in the U.S. Open. And again, once you're there, you just need to shoot the score. So it's the most democratic of all major sports.
Correct.
There's no barrier to entry other than how you perform. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's our tournament as well, you know, the America's tournament. So USGA always sets it up. They consider it fair. The pros might not consider it fair some of the times, but
it's called an open.
Open.
Yeah.
It's always on the, you know, for the most part, minus last year, but it's usually always on one of the big U.S. courses.
Mm-hmm. Father's Day final round.
Father's Day always. So a lot to be said for that. And you know, as much as everybody talks about the Masters every year and being the first major and, you know, same course every year and how beautiful that place is, you see a lot of the pros say that the Open or the U.S. Open is their favorite tournament, favorite major, because it means so much. It's the country's Open.
Mm-hmm. And I think that we can say, you know, you talk Masters, U.S. Open, British Open, those are the three. The PGA Championship is a major, but it's a step below.
Sure.
Not because of how hard it is to win or the quality of the field, because to be honest with you, the U.S. Open and all the other fields are probably weaker than the PGA's, but it's just the prestige of the Masters, the U.S. Open, and the British Open. And if you ask me in early April what my favorite major is, I'm probably going to say the Masters. But right about now, I love the U.S. Open.
In two weeks from now.
I love the difficult conditions to see these guys play against par instead of seeing a score of 13-under win.
Right.
So I love the Open.
I think anybody who wins a major when they get interviewed is going to say, this is the one I wanted to win.
Right.
Sure.
Okay.
Right.
So.
Yeah, you get a few of the guys will say, you know, the Open at St. Andrews and a lot of the European guys, obviously, but
nobody's going to say,
you're right.
I got the U.S. Open trophy, but I really wanted to win the Masters.
Right.
So, yeah, it's not going to happen, but.
Yeah, that's true. Just getting a major, especially the guys that win a major for the first time, they're definitely going to be there. But
to win the National Open is certainly a big feat, no doubt.
We'll have a great show next week to talk about all things U.S. Open.
True National Championship. Yeah, next week's preview is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And
the wrap up the week after ought to be fun too.
Absolutely.
And then it won't be long before we're talking about the British.
Correct.
It's going to go fast this summer. You got British, you got PGA, you got the Olympics and the Ryder Cup.
Right.
And then the FedEx, and it really is a solid season ahead of us that really gets underway next week.
A couple World Golf Championships in there too.
So I guess it'd be a good time to give you the answer to our Golf J trivia question, since we're talking about sectional qualifying. The last player to win the Open coming out of the sectional qualifying round was in 2009, Lucas Glover. So
one at Bethpage.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that's
Bethpage
right.
Bethpage Black.
Yep.
And not a great, didn't really use that as a springboard for the rest of his career.
No. He got injured, though.
Yeah. Did he?
Yeah.
He had a shoulder injury or something. He's got some status back on the tour now. You see him on the leaderboard a little bit now.
And he's won since that once, I think.
I think he did win once.
Yeah, he won, was it the Travelers maybe or something like that? But he's won since then. Yeah. Yeah, he's been up and down since.
Something happened. Definitely wasn't to a him physically.
Michael Campbell also did it in 2005. Now, these are two guys who did not have to go to the local qualifying. They were exempt for the sectional qualifying.
Right.
I don't know if anybody's ever gone the local qualifying route in I actually looked and tried to see, sure, and I couldn't find one way or another, yes or no.
And what Rocco had to play on Monday before the open at Torrey when he lost to Tiger. I think he had to get in that week, too.
Well, I'll tell you, I obviously, if I caddied in the sectional qualifying, I was there at the local qualifier. Totally different feel. My guy, who was one of the top players in the Central New York PGA Tour at the time, was a favorite, you know, and to qualify. And, again, there wasn't that many spots, but when he did qualify, and then you go to the next step, the sectional qualifier, he went from being a favorite to being a long shot, you know. So, so it is definitely different feels, but and there's also a local qualifying. You'll find guys who I think maybe reverse sandbag their handicaps to get under that mark to get in, and then go out and shoot a 90 something.
Right.
So it's a totally different feel. But yeah, U.S. Open, get in there today. I'd go online and see who made it. You know, the field for the U.S. Open is almost set. The St. Jude's Classic this week will be the last chance for anybody to fill out that field. And I guess it's been almost a week now since the great drama unfolded on the Golf Channel last Wednesday night. And it was Oregon winning the NCAA Team Men's Championship over Texas, and was a really exciting.
Yeah.
Team golf is great to begin with, and it came down to that final match with Fred Funk's son,
right,
mm-hmm, against the kid from Oregon, and they went, ended up going three extra holes, was it?
Yeah.
It was great. Great drama.
Oh, it was great. I mean, it was at Oregon's home course, and, you know, so the scene was great at the end there. They had all the people there were obviously pretty pro-Oregon. And,
now, do you think they over-celebrated because it came off a Texas player miss? He missed the putt, and then it was just like everybody storms the green, tackles the Oregon guy, celebrate. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was a Ryder Cup, I think that people would be all over the team that celebrated.
Sure.
But, you know, these are kids, and they were excited. But I did feel bad that it had to end on a missed putt, especially after Funk made so many putts to, you know, in that match to keep it going.
And Casey Martin's the coach of Oregon, too, so he's been there since he kind of retired from playing.
It's hard to hold back a celebration. It's a national championship.
Yeah. And your kids, they're you know, 18, 19-year-old kids.
You miss a three-pointer at the buzzer in a basketball game, the other team's going to storm the court.
That's true, too.
Right? Yeah. So
no doubt.
You can't stop that from happening.
It's good drama, though. What about this, though? You guys think they should maybe have more match play in the NCAA championships? Have it that way, or just you guys like the stroke play?
You mean like a bracket type of deal?
Yeah, have the guy seated and, you know, and have them
For the individual type?
Yeah.
I like it just the way it is. Yeah. I like the dual format as it's going on during the week to get seeds.
Sure.
And then because your team might not qualify, but you could win as an individual, which DeChambeau did last year.
Yeah.
His team didn't come close. But I think the format's tremendous right now. I like it a lot.
Yeah, and I tell you, it'll be something after watching it for the first time this year, men's and women's, that I'm going to look forward to it next year. And it's midweek.
It's good drama.
It's like major championship field golf midweek, you know.
Golf Channel.
And it was out west, so.
Prime time.
Yeah, so I don't know how that would work out next year if they move it back east. And
I watched it last year, but I can't remember where it was.
It was
Stanford won last year.
Was it in Maryland?
When the girl from Baylor missed the putt on 18.
Mm-hmm. I want to say it was in Maryland last year, but maybe.
So,
yeah. But I just think, though, that maybe having two-man best ball or things like that just instead of stroke play, I'd like to see mix it up a little bit.
Some different formats, Ryder Cup style.
Yeah, change it up a little bit each day for the team part of it.
Now, everybody saw what happened with Bo Hostler, hurt his shoulder in the semifinal match,
and couldn't compete in the finals, and they are not allowed to substitute them. And I'd say the NCAA needs to change that rule, because the team is made up of more than five golfers. Right. So it should be next man up, because that sixth man who didn't get to fill in for Hostler has been practicing and competing in events all year long. He's part of the team, and now, and so why would you
not be allowed to
put
him in there?
And it would a better program, like in basketball, your bench matters, right? Your depth matters. Yeah. But in this, it didn't matter.
Especially it's not like you're trying to put him in on the 16th hole.
Yeah, you would be able to sub in the middle of the round, but I think with what went down, a substitution is totally allowable in my mind. It should have been allowed to put a fifth player in, because they should travel with six, you know, because the guy, somebody could get ill.
Right.
You could get food poisoning or something too along the way. Who knows? Sure. But totally agree with you. Every sport has substitutions.
And who gets cheated as well? The kid that was supposed to play against a Hostler.
Right.
He doesn't get to even play now.
Right.
He gets
win,
the win, but I'm sure, I mean, I would think he would rather play on Golf Channel primetime, you know, instead he didn't even get the opportunity.
Well, and, you know, these guys that are in the actual play, you know, championships, not all of them are going to make the pros at the end of the day, but most of those guys are going to be going out and really trying to be pros. They're all looking to be professional golfers before they try to do anything else when they're at that stage and in that level of competition. So it's kind of stinks if you're not able to play and just get that test your mettle against somebody else.
Well, hey guys, we're running out of time here. We got about 3.5 minutes, but I wanted to quickly just a little local note. Dominic Bozzelli, Pittsburgh, New York native, two-time New York State Championship All-Greater Rochester Player of the Year when he was at McQuaid High School up here in our neck of the woods. The fulfillment of his lifelong dream of playing on the PGA Tour just got a whole lot closer on Sunday afternoon when he won the Corrales, I can't say the second word, Puntuana Resort.
Punta Cana.
In the Dominican Republic. Yeah. He wins the Web.com event, and that puts him well inside the top 25, which will all be automatically exempt for the tour next year. It would be tough for him to fall out of that top 25 now. And also a second win somewhere along the way would immediately
get him his card.
So here's a guy that I know that we've been following as a local kid, since he was in high school. And he's about to realize his dream in the same manner as the U.S. Open we were talking about. It has nothing to do with who gives him the chance. It has to do with how he plays. He's play yourself into the PGA Tour. So congratulations to Dominic Bozzelli.
I agree. He'll be on the PGA Tour next year. He's gone through the minor leagues, if you will. Mm-hmm. Got better each year. Good for him.
Yeah, went to Auburn University and graduated 2013, immediately turned pro, and now here 4 years later he's on the cusp of making the big time.
Right.
That's why golf is great. It's all on you to do it. Right. You're not given any exemptions. You get the exemptions, but how you play determines how your career's going to go.
There's no 10-year contract.
Right. No guaranteed money or anything like that.
Right.
These guys, all grind and all have to qualify some way or the other.
Well, fellas, we've done it again. St. Jude's Classic this week. Next week, we're back with a huge show, the U.S. Open preview. We might even try to fill some seats out here on the couch and get it going. But next week will be all U.S. Open all hour long, and it's going to be awesome. It's a great time of the year to play golf up here in the Northeast, and for the major championship golf season now is really getting into full swing.
We'll see if Fox does a little better than they did last year.
I think they will. Yeah, I think Azinger's coming on, Norman's out.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about all those changes next week. But thanks, everybody, for spending some time with us. Again, on the GolfJ.com podcast, connect with us online at Twitter at TheGolfJ, on Instagram at the_GolfJ, and search for GolfJ on Facebook. All of our episodes in the best of the wide world of golf on the web can be found at golfj.com. We'll be back next Monday night at 9 p.m. with our U.S. Open preview special. Until then, hit 'em long, not often. GolfJ.com.